You know, it's a real privilege to welcome back Dr. Winston and his wife, Christy, and another associate professor at Regent, Karen Cerf, right in front. Dr. Winston came to the Boerland as well because he needs a bit of holiday, also on his busy schedule. But he's a real stalwart in business and academics, and he's on a mission at the moment to impart as much knowledge and wisdom as he can. And he's really not just teaching, he's really imparting. So our hearts are open, Dr. Winston, to hear from the Lord through you. As you always say, you're a mouthpiece of God. And we're excited to hear from you. Yes, he's the Dean of the School of Global Leadership and Entrepreneurship at Regent University in Virginia. And he's also the coordinator of the PhD programs of the business school. And he loves the Lord, and he loves just being the mouthpiece. So we can't wait. Thank you.
Thank you, Mornay. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you. What Mornay did not tell you, but I will, is that he is just about to finish his MBA with us. And he has been an excellent student, and he has learned the lessons well. And I am excited to see what God's going to do through him and with him in the future with his degree. It's a pleasure to be back in South Africa. This is as much home for Christy and I as any place we go to. We're from Alaska originally in the far north, and it's very similar to South Africa, although different in many ways. But we have multiple people groups, multiple languages, multiple cultures. We have a country that spans a large geographical area. It's about the same size as South Africa. The difference, though, is that we have much fewer people, about 700,000 total. So we're spread out a bit. But we have the same entrepreneurial spirit, the same willingness to take on the challenges not only of the geography and of the climates, but to figure out how to do God's will within our country. So coming here is like coming home. And that's why when it's time for holiday, it's always good to come home for a holiday. So Christy and I will spend a few days next week relaxing, enjoying the view of the Stellenbosch Mountains, and just kind of contemplating on what God wants for us in the next season of our life. We've been coming here now for some 10, 11 years. Our first trip was in 2000. And it's exciting to see the changes that have gone on, and I'm going to talk today about change. It's exciting to see how all of you have begun to look at what new future you want to create in South Africa. Part of my message today is going to still be about the future. But I now have more of a sense of urgency about South Africa than I've had before. It's not that anything is being done wrong, it's just that we need to do more. We need to do more of what's good, and you're already doing what's good. And we need to be encouraged to continue the strength, and I'm going to talk about that too. Because there is so much still to do in South Africa. The reason it's so important is that South Africa, I am convinced, will lead the continent of Africa. May not be the commercial leader in business. I think that's going to be the Chinese. But because the Chinese may well be the future business of Africa, Africa needs to be careful that it does not allow another colonial period to occur. There are ways of working with international business groups so that South Africa is richly blessed in the process. Alaska learned that. We learned how to work with the oil companies and how to produce so much wealth for our state that nobody pays taxes in Alaska. In fact, the state pays taxes back to the people. Last year, every man, woman, and child in the state of Alaska received $1,800 just for being there. You imagine what would happen in South Africa if every family, husband, wife, all the kids, each got $1,800 once a year just for being in South Africa. It changes the entire paradigm of how you live and work with business. We also have changes in generation. The older that I get, the more I recognize the generation differences. When I was young in the 60s, I was part of the group that protested and complained and challenged the older. It was my generation that argued against war in Vietnam. Now it's my generation having war in Afghanistan and Iraq. It was my generation that argued against big business and corruption. Now it's my generation that are corrupt. It doesn't need to be that way. Each generation should become better than the others. So for those of you that are my age, I'm going to ask you that you look differently at the younger generation. I lecture to my generation routinely. Most of our doctoral students are my age or a little younger. And when I talk about the new generation, those coming out of K-12 schools and going into the workplace, and I explain how they think and how they communicate, how they work, how they have loyalty, how they seek significance rather than success, how they know they can make a change in the future, how they do not seem to be quite as respectful for authority, but they appreciate authority, and how they prefer to set their own agenda rather than to work for the agenda of somebody else. The older folk that I talk to say, well, they need to change. And I remember back to the 60s when my generation looked at the older one and said, you need to change. In fact, we were right then and we're now right today, but that doesn't mean that the older generation gives up everything that it understands to be good. And that's part of my message today. You began a great work in the transformation of South Africa, and you continue in a good work for transformation. But as you continue the work, you're going to grow tired. You're going to wonder why it's not done yet. We've been at this for 16 years. Why isn't it done? Why can't we just stop the striving? I'm going to talk about transformation and why it's never done, and why it's on all of our responsibilities to hold each other up and to look for the future, to recognize the new generation coming along and help them prepare, but then to be able to get out of their way. And I counsel leaders who come to the end of their leadership career. And it's amazing, we do such a good job in all of our schools of business and leadership to help people start well, but we don't do much to help them end well. And there's a time we need to turn control over to a younger generation. Step aside, saying, we did the best we could. May you now do better. And for the younger generation to appreciate what was done and then say, thank you for the platform and the foundation, and now we'll go on. The base of this message comes from Romans 12:2. In that verse, we see that we are asked to not conform to what is around us. Part of transformation is making sure you understand where you are and agreeing you don't want to be there. It doesn't mean that it's bad, it just means it's not where you want to be. Now, I'm a leadership professor and a business professor, so I'm going to throw in concepts from leadership and business. There's a guy named Chris Argris that came up with a concept of single-loop learning and double-loop learning and triple-loop learning. And single-loop learning is the process of looking at what we're doing, remaining conformed, but trying to figure out how to do it a little more efficiently. That's not what transformation is about. His second concept, called double-loop learning, is about questioning what we do and wondering, isn't there something better to do? That's part of transformation. His third part is in triple-loop learning, and this is really where transformation begins. And triple-loop learning says, why are we who we are? The basis of transformation is complete metamorphosis, which is what the verse goes into when it says, but you will be transformed. The Greek for transformed is the same as metamorphosis, the same as a butterfly changed from a caterpillar. For the caterpillar and the butterfly, it seems to be a slow process based on the entire lifespan of a caterpillar butterfly. It's also very difficult. It's painful to go through triple loop and double loop learning. I question, and I don't want to put too much humanness into the caterpillar, but I seriously question if the caterpillar, knowing what was about to happen, would do it. As a result, in transformation, many times when we see the changes we must make, we decide not to. And we hold on to who we are and we seek to remain conformed. But Paul in his message says, don't be conformed to what you are. Be transformed. Be changed. And he said the reason for this is so that you might prove the perfect will of God. Now, how do you prove this? The verse says you will be renewed in your mind. Now, as an educator, that's where I hang on to. My job is to be the one who helps renew the mind. From this verse, I've come to realize that if you really want to get close to God, you first have to get it in your head. You have to know what you want to do. And then it has to move to your heart, and that's where the triple loop learning comes in. What are the values that you hold dear, and how do you wish to express those values? What values does South Africa hold? In a pluralistic society, you have a lot of competing values, which makes transformation difficult. So you must collectively come to the point of understanding what the core South African values are. What does it mean to be South African? What does it mean to be a Christian in South Africa? What does it mean to be a Christian in Africa? And what does it mean to be a Christian in the world? You have to explore in that double loop learning, what is God's will? What does God want for South Africa? Must want a lot. He gave you a lot of wonderful people. I can't tell you how many times I walk away from meetings in South Africa saying, you know, I wish we had the same level of passion and excitement and interest in the United States. We are losing our Christian presence in the United States. Christianity is moving south. And it will be the southern hemisphere that will control Christianity. Based on the data that we're getting, the north will become Muslim with strong pockets of Christianity. The United States is changing. We will probably see our Christian church dominated by Hispanic very soon. And that's good. Hopefully they'll do a better job than we did. But what does it mean to be South African? What concepts do you hold? And why do we seek to know the will of God? Romans 12:2 goes on and says, so that we know what is good. I look forward to seeing the news reports when the South African government starts reporting what it means to be good. I look forward to that in the United States as well. We don't see it. All we hear in the United States is what's wrong. Our politicians stand up and complain first about each other and then about everybody else. And the more they can distract us by looking at the problems around us, the less we really care what they do. Rather, we need statespeople who stand up and say, I can tell you what's good for South Africa. Here's what I believe. And I can tell you how long it's going to take to get there. But our politicians in the United States don't want to do that because that means they won't get reelected. It's unfortunate we've created a system now where it's better to do bad and get reelected than to do good and not get reelected. And part of my message in a few minutes will tell you why it's better to do good. And if necessary, sacrifice yourself in the job for the future of the country. The kind of metamorphosis that exists in a country like South Africa is generational in nature. It's not going to happen in 2 years or 16 years. It may be 75, 80, 100. In the United States, we started a transformation in 1776. It wasn't until the 1860s that we began to realize maybe we're onto something. We wanted to give up several times and just throw our hands up and go back to being a colony again, a collection of colonies. It wasn't until the 1900s that we really began to have a strong presence. Now in the S-curve of generations, we are beginning to decline. And I hear people in the United States say all the time, we're going to get the jobs back that went overseas. No, we're not. Transformation does not go backwards. In the United States, we have to figure out new jobs that are not in manufacturing or in service. We've lost those. And that's okay. Transformation says we will become something new. So like in South Africa, you need to find the jobs of the future. The reports that we're reading indicate that those coming out of the K-12 schools will have some 14 jobs in their life, all of them different, and most of them jobs that we don't even know they exist at this point, new jobs, for new technologies, doing new things. Why do we need to understand, according to Romans 12:2, what's good? so that we know what's acceptable that will work in the organization of the country and of the world, and that which is perfect. Now, to help explain how that happens, let me take you to a concept that's expressed in Ezekiel 1, Ezekiel 10, and Revelation 4. Ezekiel says that he saw a being with four faces. And he described that being in the first chapter of the book of Ezekiel, and then described it again in chapter 10. John in Revelation describes almost the exact same thing in Revelation 4. And in both accounts, the being is described as having the four faces with all four faces active. Not that one being had one face and the other three turned off, but that all four were active. And I'd like to explain to you how I think transformation needs to occur, whether it's in a small organization or a country or a continent or globally. The first face that Ezekiel describes is that of a lion. And John, in his account, also describes the same face. The characteristics of a lion are that of strength, power, authority, royalty, command. Throughout Scripture, we find the definition of the lion to mean opportunity, confidence. Lion is used to describe Jesus. And we see in the Gospel of Matthew a constant reference to the Lion of Judah. And in Matthew, the focus is on Jesus' lineage. So do all of you have a lineage in South Africa. Most people I meet in South Africa can tell me when their families came here. It's true in many parts of the United States as well. My family settled in Virginia in the 1670s. I have a lineage in Virginia. I have a lineage through all the wars that we've had, in that one of my great-great-great-great-great-great uncles was a general in the Revolutionary War. And my family fought in the Civil War. Wrong side, but they fought. And my family's homes are not too far from where we live right now. And my father fought in the World War. And my sons have served in the most recent conflicts. We have a lineage. We need to understand who we are and why we're here. We need to understand that we have a place in South Africa because of who we are. When the lion talks, people listen. The face of the lion has to describe what is the will of God. The lion has to present to all what it means to be powerful. But that doesn't mean that some of us are lions. It means that all of us are lions all the time. In a pluralistic society like South Africa, such as the United States, there are those in the majority and those in the minority. The majority can speak strength and vote and accomplish things. Those in minority must speak truth, change, and constantly be a voice that advocates where the country needs to go. In doing so, there will be a slow, gradual shift. I've watched in the United States some of the minority groups, such as the Vietnamese and Koreans. They have done an incredible job of shaping commerce, shaping society. I've watched the minority of Hispanics, as they have grown in number in the United States, begin to change how we think, how we do business. Regent University is now beginning to change the way it operates in order to accommodate the Hispanic population, especially the young Hispanics. They think differently. They're more collectivist. Whereas the United States, in majority, is individualistic. The Hispanics process time differently, much closer to African time, quite frankly. So I find myself over the years learning about African time, and now in the university when we have meetings, I can relate to what we talk about for Hispanic time. I understand it. I also understand that Hispanics, Latin Americans, have a different sense of authority. Much more power distance and recognizing the authority of the individual. The young kids coming along, though, are different. The young kids understand authority, but don't respect it in the same way. And it's not that they are disrespectful, they respect it differently. My generation, I would never walk into the president of the university's office as a student saying, "Hey, I want to talk to you. I have an issue." The new kids will walk in and not only say that, but expect the president to turn around saying, "I've been waiting for you all day. Have a seat." And they will not be disrespectful, the young ones. But they believe that they have something of significance to contribute. And so it is with the young Hispanic. So it will be as South Africa continues to grow and transform. You will find the young ones among you will change the way you think. But you must speak both old and young as lions. You must explain the will of God. You must present it in such a way that it is compelling, as when a lion roars, it is compelling. In fact, for most of us, if a lion walked in and roared, we would stand up out of the respect of the strength and the power. So it is with transformation. You must speak the truth. You must speak the new values that you wish to attain. You must speak the new form that you wish to be. And you can do that. I've listened to you for 10 years. I've never met a group of people, as I meet in South Africa, that have such an incredible focus on God. And Africa is blessed. When I come down here, I find out over and over again the number of mission trips and cooperations and support that I see coming from South Africa to the rest of Africa. So it will be as the Chinese move into Africa. The greatest mission field of the world is going to come right to your doorstep. And in fact, they're going to pay you to be here. What a deal. But you need to think about what that new cooperation means. And do not forget history. For history has an unfortunate tendency to repeat itself. That's the purpose of the lion. To remember the history. To speak about the desired present. The second face that Ezekiel mentioned, he uses two different words. In Ezekiel 1, he talks about a bull, but in the second account, he talks about a cherub. When John talked about it in Revelation, he called it a calf. There are similarities in the words that were used. In the Hebrew, the word that we find for bull also means a young animal. The word we find in Hebrew for cherub also implies a young being. The word we find in Revelation 4 talks about a bullock or a young animal. And so we get a sense that in these three words, it refers to a young animal of service. Transformation does not occur because the lion just roars, but in addition, because the ox does the work. We see this same face, although not described this way, but we see the same face in Proverbs 31, when the wife, who is a metaphor for wisdom in that chapter, but also a metaphor for leadership, says that after she has figured out what's good for the household, and after she has secured what she needs to secure in terms of goods, she girds her loins and begins to work alongside everybody else. Transformation comes because it's very hard work. Now, in academia, I'm unfortunately sometimes getting used to being around professors who like to just sit and talk. And they'll all sit around and tell me what's wrong and tell me what needs to be done. And then I say, "Okay, are you ready to work?" "Oh, no, not me. It's not my job. I told you what to do. I'm done." The being has four faces operating simultaneously. In addition to the lion that's roaring about transformation and where you need to be and how you need to be there and why it's important, the face of the ox says, let's get to work. The ox are put sometimes in yoke alone and sometimes in yoke together. And when the ox are put together, they must work together, even if each does not get along fully with the other. If you've ever watched a team of oxen, and for today it's not all that common to see them now, if they disagree with each other, the field does not get plowed. The master spends his or her time disciplining the ox to get them to work together. Transformation requires that we not only know the will of God, but that we do it. The end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, now that I've told you everything that you need to know, you have to go do it. There's a measure of serving. So it is with South Africa. You're going to need to serve for generations. And much like plowing a field, the ox who does the plowing may not see the benefit of the harvest for a very long time. We first started coming to South Africa in 2000, and I listened to a lot of black Africans tell me, good, now we will get what we want. I said, no, you won't. I said, you may not see one bit of benefit. Your grandchildren will. You have to work the rest of your life with the knowledge that you may never see the benefit. For the same reason, the caterpillar spends so much work building a cocoon, but that caterpillar never sees the butterfly. By generation, it becomes the butterfly. And in metamorphosis, in transformation, people may not see the beginning, and they may die before the end, but they need to know that the service is required. As I mentioned, in the United States, we served for some 75 years before we began to see any collective benefit. And then, just as we were seeing the collective benefit, we had a civil war that supposedly ended in the late 1860s. But I can tell you, in the southern states of the United States, that war is not over. 125 years later, people will tell you it's just in abeyance. In the northern part of the United States, that war is referred to as the Civil War. In the middle southern part where Christy and I live, people say there was nothing civil about it. It's called the War Between the States. When we go farther south, they tell us that there was no war between the states. It was the War of Northern Aggression. So it is in transformation that we interpret things differently. I expect it'll be another 75 years before we stop referring to that war. We unfortunately keep reenacting that war. And while I'm not saying we need to forget the past, I'm saying we need to stop living in the past. Transformation using double loop and triple loop learning means to recognize who you are, where you were, how you got to where you are, but understanding why you want to get to the next place. If we continue to live in the past, we have no opportunity to live in the future. And if we value the past, we have great difficulty valuing the future. So the face of the ox requires that we work not only for the present, but for the future, without concern of whether we see the benefits. The Gospel of Mark represents the face of the ox. Mark was written for a Roman audience that valued service and performance and sought to see things get done. So it is for transformation that you have to work. The third face that both Ezekiel and John reflect on is the face of man. In the understanding of man, the Hebrew word is Adam, and the Greek word is anthropos. So we can interpret this to mean human or humanity. But while the lion roars about where we need to go and expresses the values, and the ox face does the hard job of service and work, we must do so through the face of humanity in that we love people. When asked about the greatest commandment, Jesus answered that there were two. The first was to love God. Second was to love people. We are commanded to love people. Now, those two commandments summarize the Ten Commandments. When we look at the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount, it talks more about loving people, an agapao type of love, doing the right thing at the right time for the right reason for the right people. So while as a lion we roar about what's important, we roar about what we need to do for the present, and we put the yoke on to do the hard work at the present, knowing that we're going to be serving for the future, we must do so in a manner that demonstrates love for each other. And not just love for the other ox in the yoke, but for all the ox throughout South Africa, throughout Africa, throughout the world. So as the Chinese business people begin to come into South Africa, love them. It's only through love that people are going to listen. If the lion roars and there's no love, people are afraid and run away. But when the lion roars and there is love, people will listen. So it is with the opportunity to understand the will of God through the commandments, to understand what is good from a perspective of loving people, to know what's acceptable. This concept is not new. It's been around in leadership for quite some time. We've known from back in the 1950s and 1960s that we got it all wrong about leadership and management. The folk from the 1930s and 40s taught us how to do things without love. The folk in the 50s and 60s said, but what about love? In the 80s and 90s, we said, what is love? Only recently do we see our leadership theories beginning to incorporate love, the type of love that does the right thing for the right people at the right time. We're seeing leadership now being more interested about hope, about faith, about a spiritual sense of well-being. And so it is in transformation, you must understand that you have to have compassion for the whole. You must serve and serve hard, but understand there are times when people just need a hug. Now, some of us are good at that, some are not. I'm not good at that. I'm more the lion and more the ox. I haven't got much humanity in me. My students remind me of that. My staff reminds me of that. As a result, I have to consciously be aware that if metamorphosis and transformation are going to occur, and if I'm going to be a part of it, that I have to first recognize my weakness and either compensate or get somebody else along who can help. So it is for all of you in South Africa as you go through this process of transformation. You must be careful that you focus on all the faces. The Gospel of Luke helps us understand this humanity. As you read the Gospel of Luke written for the Greek audience, there is a focus on the perfect person, body, mind, and spirit. This concept is acceptable around the world. There was a study done some years ago by a group of professors that looked at organizational behavior and leadership effectiveness around the world in 62 different countries. Some of the countries reported a high level of humaneness. Some reported a low level. What was interesting is that every country said they wanted more humaneness and that there should be more humaneness. In transformation, there must be love. The next time you're serving yoked to another ox, give the ox a hug. Even if the ox is somebody like me that says, get away. Say, come here, you big ox, I'm going to give you a hug. God loves you, I'm trying, I'll get there. And in the process, we begin to operate together. The old adage that people want to know that you care before they care anything about what you know is true. Regardless of what business or profession we're in. When we operate in humanity, We reflect the love of God. As we serve to do the will of God, as we explain what the will of God is. The next face that both Ezekiel and John describe is the face of an eagle. Throughout Scripture, we find eagles as on high, nesting on high, seeing below, recognizing the details, being able to see farther. While the ox can only see a short distance ahead, the eagle sees miles ahead. So it is in transformation, you not only have to look at the butterfly building the cocoon, the present, but to understand the future. South Africa has an advantage here. I study strategic foresight and future studies in the United States and work with folk that do. There's a large group of futurists here in South Africa. You already have an advantage. You don't have to go learn what it is. As a society, you already have some sense. The eagle sees beyond the hill and recognizes what's coming, which is why you need to understand how the Chinese do business. You also need to understand that the Chinese operate with 200 and 300-year strategies. Africa, collectively, has always been able to understand its past, but unfortunately it tends to live in it. It comprehends the present, but doesn't really comprehend why it got where it got. But collectively, across the continent of Africa, there's not a great sense of the future. Hence, things get repeated. In metamorphosis, you must keep your eye like the eagle on the future. You must see what is coming, because if the future you build does not fit the trends that are going on, you will find yourself alone with no present. In future studies, we examine the probable futures based on the trends. If growth rates continue, if population rates continue, if birth rates continue, if economic rates continue, if technology continues, if weather patterns continue, if fish development continues, we can describe the probable futures. There is a preferred future, and part of transformation is to work towards that preferred future. You must all agree on it, because if the ox all don't agree on the plowing, then no plowing gets done. And if you don't agree on the future in love and to understand why the future is valuable for everybody, then nobody cares. For example, in South Africa, as you look through triple loop learning and metamorphosis and change in your education, you need to take a look at those children that are 4 and 5 years old and ask yourself, what do they need? I work in education. It's deplorable every day when I see master's and doctoral students come into our programs with absolutely no curiosity. Yet, I watched my 3 boys grow up and now my 3 grandsons, and when they're young, they're incredibly curious. They learn huge amounts. They can explain things, sometimes a bit fanciful, but in fact, that's part of triple loop learning. Why is a rock just a rock? Why can't it be something else? And they ask hard questions, always beginning with why. Why this? Why that? Christy one day was in the car driving with our oldest grandson, and he was in the back seat asking questions. Where are you going? Why are you doing that? What's over here? What's over there? And she kind of leaned her head back and said, Jonah, why do you ask so many questions? He said, because I want to talk to you. It's amazing, out of education, we ask questions so that we understand, so that we can communicate with others. Yet, for some reason, in the United States at least, by the time they get through the K-12 schools, they don't have any curiosity. They don't care. They've gone through tests. They don't understand the value of the tests. They don't care. Our colleges that I'm part of measure student performance based on the number of hours they sat in a chair. So in today's session, you get 2 hours of credit. Congratulations. You will have sat for 2 hours. Have you learned anything? We don't know. We can test you on things, but in metamorphosis, it's not about the words that you memorize or the thoughts you can repeat. It's about seeing a new future through the eyes of the face of the eagle. And to be able to describe that through the roar of the lion. It is leaders to call people to work through the face of the ox. The future is coming whether we help shape it or whether we just accept it. I look forward in education in the United States where we stop measuring people on seat time. You know, in my world, the definition of a perfect 3-hour course is 47 hours of seat time. Just sit for 47 hours, we'll give you credit. Now, we give you tests to see what kind of grade you get for that credit. But think about what happens when we change education to say, you know, rather than make you sit here for this long, here are the things we want you to be able to do that'll help prepare us for metamorphosis. We want you to go out and pick up a rock and tell us what it really is. From God's perfect will, is that rock a weapon? Is that rock a tool? Is that rock a piece of art? Is that rock the building block for a cathedral? What is it? What do you see with it? What can we do with it? And how can we communicate that to everybody else around the world? And then when we're convinced that the person who's in the program got it all right, whatever right is, as we define it in metamorphosis from Romans 12:2, give them the degree. They're ready. Now put them to work so that they can become more of the ox. I encourage you to spend time thinking about how you need to operate in this new change of metamorphosis. I encourage you to look around and say, you know, we are a pluralistic society, but there are common values that we hold. And there may be other values we have not thought of. Triple loop learning. Why don't we get together and ask ourselves, who are we? Why are we here? What is God's will for us, our individual lives, and for society in South Africa? And what is it that constitutes good? What is it that's acceptable? What is it that would be perfect? How do we get there? My oldest grandson, when he's through playing with something, stands up, looks at it, looks at me, and says, Grandpa, it's perfect. And he walks away. He knows what perfect is. Sometimes, though, I ask him what he's building. He says, I don't know, I'm not done yet. It's part of metamorphosis. The lion may help us understand better what we're looking towards. The ox says, I don't know, I'm not done yet. The eagle says, I'll tell you where you're going next. Finish this. The next field is just over the hill. It's got good soil. It's got good water. It'll grow good crops. But we need to plow it soon. In the process, South Africa will morph into what God's will is for it. Many of you may not really see the end result. That's okay. As long as we have helped prepare for the future. I look forward to all of you that are much younger than me making this world a better place for my grandchildren. My generation didn't do so well. We got a good base, but we didn't do as well as we could have. We took our eyes off the faces of the beings and focused for a while on the wrong things. I encourage you not to do that. Let me finish at this point. I'd like to pray for all of you. And then Mornay, whoever is next, have him come on up. Join me in prayer, please. Father, I ask your blessing upon South Africa, for this is truly your country. From the cradle of your creation, through the development of your people, to the comprehension of what it means to live together and work together in a society in which everyone can be valued. I ask, Lord, in part of this transformation, this metamorphosis, that you help South Africa define the values of the future, to create a sense of community, a sense of achievement, a sense of strength, and in the process to define what is acceptable, what is good, and what is perfect. To do so in a manner that shows the strength of the lion, that shows the service of the ox, the humanity of people, and the vision that the eagle can see across the next hill. For our work, Lord, is not about us, but about you. So that we can echo Jesus' words and say, but it's not my will, but the will of my Father who sent me. In the process, Lord, remind us every day that you love us. Remind us every day that we are yours. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.